Hello and welcome back to Tales from Wisteria Lane, the podcast where we give you a fair view of all things Desperate Housewives. I'm Joel.
I'm Billy Ray.
And today, after a week off, we apologise, we are doing Season 7, Episode 8, Sorry Grateful, which is the worst title in the world.
In all fairness, we had a power cut.
We did have a power cut. We had zero electricity last weekend, so unfortunately the recording was pushed back a week.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be doing the overview of the episode and B will be giving us the trivia. So do you have anything to start us off?
So this episode was written by Annie Weissman and directed by David Grossman. It first aired on the 14th of November 2010 and it is the 142nd episode of this show, which means it's the 142nd episode of the podcast if you don't include our Christmas special, A Kiss Before Christmas. The episode's title comes from the song Sorry Grateful from Sondheim's show Company. Apparently there is a continuity error in the episode as the show opens with Beth continuing her visit with Felicia and she's no longer wearing the outfit that she entered the room in, which was a high neck buttoned white blouse with a brooch and a dark blue skirt.
I just assumed it was a different visit.
So did I, but it's on there so I thought I'd mention it. Personally, I don't actually know if that is confirmed to be a continuity error because I don't think it's mentioned that it's the same time.
No, I think it's safe to say that we can take that with a pinch of salt because there's nothing to confirm that it was the same meeting, but there's also nothing to deny it either, so...
I mean, Felicia's wearing the same outfit. Outfit repeater.
Outfit repeater. You, Felicia Tillman, you are an outfit repeater.
This is the first episode of the show to have Thanksgiving as a focused holiday.
Is it really?
Yeah.
No. Oh, yeah, I think that's true.
No other Thanksgiving episodes.
No.
So far. So the number one songs were the same as they were last week. They were We Are Who We Are by Kesha in the UK and Only Go in the World by Rihanna in the US.
Mm.
On the 10th of November 2010, so the Monday of this week, there was the 44th Country Music Awards with Brad Paisley, Miranda Lambert and Blake Shelton as notable winners. And also, Alan Menken, who was a composer at Disney, received a Hollywood star on the Walk of Fame.
Damn straight.
And I'm pretty sure he was gone by this point.
He was gone by this point, I think. And didn't he do, like, Part of Your World and...
Yeah, he composed all the music for The Little Mermaid.
Yeah, he did all the big I Want songs.
Yes. On the 13th of November 2010, Australian rock band Powderfinger performed their last concert at the Brisbane River Stage. So that's for you... Powderfinger fans out there.
I've never heard of them.
No. And on the 14th of November 2010, Disney's Tangled premiered at the El Capitan Theatre, loosely based on the German fairy tale Rapunzel by brothers Jacob and Wilhelm Grimm, aka the Brothers Grimm.
I mean, fantastic film. Tangled's incredible.
Yeah, so it was a Disney-ish week, I guess.
Yeah, well, it really was.
And that is all my trivia.
Okay, so... Previously on Desperate Housewives, Susan took a job as Lynette's nanny. Brie and Keith's mother had a bit of a rocky start. Tom and Renee are apparently keeping a secret from Lynette, and Beth convinced Paul to let her stay to please her mother, who we have since found out is Felicia.
Yeah, that was a surprise.
Beth is a plant. She's been planted by Felicia.
She's a mole. So
we'll start with Bree's story, because I just think it's fairly boring in comparison to everyone else's.
Gosh, I don't even remember it. I did these notes 2 weeks ago.
Exactly. It's just kind of there. So we open Bree's story and she is hanging up Thanksgiving decorations when Keith's mother comes over to apologise.
An unexpected apology considering that in sitcoms and TV tropes, you expect them to be enemies for a while.
Yeah, you expect it to last a little bit and not be resolved within an episode or two.
But Desperate is pretty good at breaking those stereotypes.
Yeah, and just taking it in a different direction. Mm. So Brie accepts the apology and says she understands why she may have been taken aback, but I kept writing Dr. Wagner because I forgot her actual name when I first started writing the notes. But Dr. Wagner claims there is more to it and starts to open up to Brie about her marital problems with Keith's dad, which is a bit inappropriate.
Yes, it's...
I get that Brie and Dr. Wagner are clearly of a similar age. You know, they're both going through menopause. That was established in the last episode. So I imagine that Mary is probably seeing Brie as a friend or possible friend. But she does have to remember that Brie is her son's girlfriend.
Yeah, it's definitely a different dynamic than you'd expect from most mother-in-laws.
Yeah. So Brie tells Keith's mum that she has to be open about her feelings and she invites them to Thanksgiving dinner.
Hmm. She does say in this bit as well, in my defence, I am a messy drunk, but that's not a good defence. You got drunk on purpose.
That is true.
You purposely got drunk. Before she was drunk, she was like, I'm a messy drunk. And who knows what I'll say?
She also comes over and she's like, oh, I'm coming over to apologize because Keith's told me you've got guns. Girl, bye. You're apologizing because I own guns. Like, that's literally
it. Yeah, yeah.
So, Bree and Keith have just been having sex when Bree suddenly remembers to tell Keith that she has invited his parents to Thanksgiving dinner, which is a bit of a weird time to be thinking of parents, but whatever.
Mm.
We move on. Keith wishes that it was just them, as he had a whole night planned, but Bree promises that they can do something alone next weekend instead. And she rushes off to go make them food, and we see Keith looking at an engagement ring.
Well, that's a bad idea.
It's also a bit soon, isn't it?
It's also a very bad idea considering the last conversation they had.
Didn't they just have an argument about children?
They literally just had a conversation of her saying, I don't want any more, and him saying, I do.
Yeah, it wasn't an argument, but yeah, it was definitely, there was definitely information within that conversation to imply that maybe this relationship isn't for the long haul.
Yeah,
So Karen and Roy rock up to Bree's place for dinner, and apparently Bree invited them last year, but she forgot, and Karen didn't really see fit to remind her at any point.
Yeah, I found that a bit strange.
It was just a bit odd that they would just rock up. Like, if someone invited me to something in a year's time, and I don't get another invitation in that space of a year, I would assume that that's not happening.
Yeah, maybe call.
Yeah.
You know, with a reminder. Yeah. Like, you said that about coming over last year. I just remembered. Is that still happening?
Are we still able to come over? Because apparently last year, Bree was upset because Karen and Roy spent their Thanksgiving at Pancake Castle or something.
Yeah.
And so that made Bree sad. And so that's why she invited them over to hers. So Karen and Roy guilt trip Bree into letting them join her Thanksgiving dinner. And then we see Keith and his parents turn up and they are in full on arguing mode.
Yeah.
Like from the get go, we were warned. We were warned that Mary and Richard seemed to have some tension. Apparently, I didn't say this in the previous scene, but they grew apart because Richard was in the army, and so he spent all the Navy or one of those, and so he spent a lot of time away, and they learned to be apart, and now that they're back together, they're struggling with the dynamic of being together so much again.
Yeah, that's actually quite sad.
It is quite sad, and I imagine it's probably happened to quite a lot of couples.
But this is messy, like, right out the gate.
At someone else's house as well, like, you're around someone, have some respect, behave yourselves.
Respect your host.
Yeah. But at dinner, tensions begin running high between Richard and Mary, who just seem to only ever communicate via arguing, which is making everyone uncomfortable, including Karen and Roy.
Yeah.
Who actually, they could just leave if they want to. Like, they invited themselves, in a sense.
Yeah, and they say about fun facts about Cinnamon.
Yeah. I knew a stripper named Cinnamon.
Karen's like, are there any good Cinnamon facts to talk about or something, right?
You at the dinner table.
I mean, do you want to know some Cinnamon facts?
You could have put that in your trivia.
I have.
Oh, you've got to. Oh, okay, that's fine.
If you're ever in this situation, guys, here's a few little facts about cinnamon just to get the conversation changed. It's a spice obtained from the inner bark of several tree species from the genus Cinnamomum.
Cinnamomum.
It's literally spelled cinnamomum.
Anemone.
M-O-M-U-M. Cinnamomum. But basically, cinnamon's made from trees.
Yeah.
And tree bark.
Yeah.
The English word cinnamon, attested in the English since the 15th century, derives from an ancient Greek word which I cannot pronounce, but when you translate to English, is spelt kinnamomum.
Okay.
And lastly, and this one is for all the nutritionists out there, ground cinnamon is 11% water, 18% carbohydrates, which includes 53% dietary fiber, 4% protein, and 1% fat.
Is ground cinnamon a carb?
Highly, apparently.
So eventually, Mary announces to everyone that she's taken Bree's advice and she asks for a divorce before leaving the table. Now, taking Bree's advice is taken a bit out of context.
Yes, and now earlier I said that we're breaking the sitcom stereotype by having them not be enemies for a long period of time, but now we're going right back to sitcom tropes with the whole misunderstanding and someone thinks that their partner or friend convinced their parents to get divorced, which is taken way out of context.
Yeah, because then Keith's like, you told my mum to get a divorce, and even Bree's like, no. So Bree goes to Keith's place to check on him, and his dad is staying with him now, but seems to be doing okay, apparently, whereas Keith is pretty freaked out by the whole thing and doesn't believe that marriage is worth it now that he has seen his parents fall apart.
Brie, you can use that.
Right? I love how it really doesn't take long. In the space of an episode, Keith goes from looking at an engagement ring that he's bought to now being like, no, marriage, it's not for me.
He's been a bit dramatic, though. He goes...
A bit?
He's like, they were married for 35 years. If it can fall apart that quickly... And I'm like, that quickly? 35 years is quite a long marriage.
Yeah.
Some don't even last a year.
No. Keith's dad overhears and explains that it was a long time coming, and so not to be cynical about marriage now. And then Keith asks Brie if they'll go for a walk and leaves Brie alone with his dad for a few minutes. And Richard tells Brie that Keith's a lucky guy and that he knew Brie was special from the moment he met her.
Yeah, he's acting a bit creepy.
And then he comes across quite creepy in this scene.
Yeah, there was clearly some flirtatious behaviour.
From his side, not from Brie's.
From his side, yeah.
Like, Brie was just kind of trying to be polite.
Yeah, it was.
From his side, like, Keith then comes back into the room and he tells Brie that he's ready to go for that walk. And then Richard just kind of watches Brie as she walks away. It's kind of creepy.
Yeah, it is a bit weird.
So, Renee comes over to find out what Lynette's plans are for Thanksgiving and invites her over to hers this year, which Lynette jumps at the opportunity. But there is an addendum and we have a clip.
Oh, wait. Susan was already coming to our place. Is it okay if she comes too?
Well, I suppose she went overtime, but I could use the extra kitchen help.
As a guest.
Oh, come on.
What have you got against Susan?
She's always so perky and poor. It's an annoying combination.
She's my friend, and it is Thanksgiving.
I suppose it is a time to be thankful. And I'm thankful I'm not her. Oh, what the hell? She can come.
I love that clip.
Absolutely. Oh, God. Renee is... She eats it up every scene. Every scene she's chewing on that scenery, Ms. Renee.
When I first watched this particular episode, I just remember her saying that, and I was like, finally, someone said it.
What?
Susan is so annoying.
She is annoying. She's so perky and poor. It's an annoying combination.
Right? She's the friend that everyone likes, but you don't like. Like, you just don't get on with them. And everyone's like, oh, we should invite so-and-so. And you're like, oh, come on.
We've all been there. We all have that friend in the friendship group.
Like, I'm sorry, but I can't get along with someone like Susan. She's judgy. She's whiny. She, like, preaches her values on everyone, as we will find out with this baby scene.
It's coming up.
I just can't get along with that.
So, inside Lynette's place, she tells Susan that they're invited to Renee's while Susan is trying to get Paige to sleep. But Lynette now thinks it's time to sleep train her daughter, which Susan finds quite cruel.
Another thing that I was thinking of doing trivia on, but I just didn't run out of time.
You ran out of time? We had 2 weeks.
Yeah, but it's been a very busy 2 weeks.
Susan meets up with Lynette, who is still sleep training Paige, much to Susan's dismay. Lynette turns off the baby monitor so that they can't hear the crying, and then she starts to change the subject with Susan. It doesn't take long for Susan to lose control and go inside to comfort Paige behind Lynette's back. After some amount of time, Lynette comes inside and finds Susan with Paige, so she puts her foot down as her boss and tells her that she essentially has to do what she says.
Yeah, and I was quite proud of Lynette in that moment for laying down the law, because it's not an easy thing to do, especially with a friend.
I'm not really sure how I feel about sleep training.
I think it's... Well, I forgot to research it. It sounds like it could be necessary.
I don't know if I was ever sleep trained. I don't think it's necessary. I think it's a form of parenting, but who is more correct in this scenario? Is it Susan, who believes that sleep training is, you know, morally not a very nice thing to do? Or is it Lynette, who believes that even though at this time it might not be a very good feeling for the child, in the end what you're giving them is a gift?
I would say Lynette's in the right, and not because I dislike Susan, but because I don't know any cons of sleep training. All I can say is it's a thing that you can do with your child, and it's her child, and it's her right to do that. But the thing with babies is they're normally crying when they need something, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. As you can tell, listeners, we do not have a child.
I don't know what to think of the story. I feel like Lynette's in the right because it's her kid, but I'm also like, I don't know if it's bad. Like, should you do it? Is there any reason not to do it?
Yeah.
So I'm just going to try and stay Sweden.
We'll stay neutral on...
Or is it Switzerland?
Switzerland.
Sorry, Switzerland.
You can be Sweden if you want, babe. You can be Sweden if you want.
Well, Sweden's a lovely place to live, apparently, so I'll be Sweden as well.
You can't be both Sweden and Switzerland.
Ugh, fine, I'll just be on the fence.
You'll be the Switzerland of that decision, will you?
Yeah.
So At Renee's, Tom heads over to deliver a pie ahead of dinner, but Renee answers in just a towel, hoping to seduce the cable guy to get free channels, which is major queen energy, I must say.
Yeah, that is hilarious.
So this distracts Tom, who ends up walking away, pie still in hand, and so she reminds him of the pie and asks him to bring it in for her as she can't really let go of the towel, which he does. Inside, they reminisce about how Tom caught Renee in a towel the last time as well, and then she asks what he thinks this time, claiming that she isn't hitting on him, but she just wants compliments.
Yeah.
Which again, queen energy.
This is strange behaviour, terrible behaviour from both of them. What are they doing?
Oh, it is. Renee is playing with fire here, and although I don't necessarily think that she has any intention right now of going through with anything, I think she knows that she would get a reaction out of Tom and that will make her feel good. And I think that's what she cares about right now.
Yeah, it's bad.
Recently divorced, newly single, she's looking to feel good.
It's funny though, because in the last episode, we spoke about Renee and Tom and you said that hasn't come up since episode one, but here it is.
Here it is. I do have a nasty habit of being like that, don't I? Saying that something hasn't come up and that it comes up next episode.
I guess the show actually has a good way of being like, we haven't done this in a while. We should probably get back to that.
Yeah. Tom tells her that she looks incredible and then awkwardly rushes out, you know, probably so we can have a wank.
Mm.
It's now Thanksgiving Day. And Susan arrives at Renee's place with MJ, all happy and stuff, to Renee's annoyance, because she lives in an apartment. Take it down a notch.
Yeah.
Turns out Susan bitches about Renee to MJ, and this is why you don't bitch about people to your kids.
Yeah, that's really stupid.
Because they end up telling the person what you've been saying.
Yeah.
It also turns out that Renee is still sticking with her no kids rule and is making the kids eat on the driveway.
Yeah, that's really cruel.
Why? It's a nice day. It's like it's raining.
It's outside. So? Don't be so cruel.
Lynette and Tom and the kids arrive without Paige or the twins either, because I guess they don't really constitute as kids anymore. And Lynette tells Susan that both the twins are watching Paige and are instructed to pick her up if she cries for more than 20 minutes.
Hmm.
Later on, Susan comes out to give the kids snacks, and it turns out Renee slapped the caterer, so dinner's running a bit late. That's when Susan hears crying, which Parker believes could be the caterer.
Well, yeah. Why did she slap the caterer?
I don't know. Why would she slap anybody? She's a diva.
Why did she do anything?
She's a diva. She's the Mariah Carey of Desperate Housewives. Hmm. Susan believes it's Paige, and Penny says that she's been crying for a long time. So Susan uses the football to sneak down to Lynette's place and grab Paige to calm her down. And the twins are so invested in the football game on television that they don't even realise.
Yeah, I would be annoyed at Susan, but it has been a really long time, so fair.
Has it been a really long time?
Well, according to Penny. But then again,
Penny, babe.
A long time could be anything.
Exactly. Children have no concept of time. So Lynette brings out her kids some food, but MJ hasn't got any because Susan hasn't come back, which he tells Lynette, and it doesn't take her very long to figure out what Susan has done, and Lynette goes to her place to find Susan to remind her that she may be stopping Paige from crying, but her son is starving in the process.
I was going to say, so she's basically letting her son starve so that she can comfort someone else's baby?
Yeah. So Lynette sees that Paige is missing. The twins don't even hear Lynette. And Susan manages to sneak Paige back into her crib, which doesn't work because that just makes Lynette more suspicious.
Yeah, and this is the funniest scene in the episode. Her walking around trying to find Susan, and she just puts the baby back.
Yeah, I know.
So if Lynette's going to be like, oh, I just must have missed her the first time.
Oh, I must have completely not realised she's there.
Oh, crazy me, must be back on my crazy pill. Oh.
So she catches Susan and calls her out for not doing what Lynette has been asking her to do, telling her that it was working. But Susan claims that it's a crappy system for lazy mums.
She asks the boys to go upstairs so that she can talk to Susan, as if they would even notice that you're there talking at all.
Right, they haven't even noticed. And then, yeah, Lynette basically turns to the twins and she, like, tells them to turn off the game and then tells them to go upstairs to finish watching it. Can't you go upstairs to Susan?
Or just talk behind them. They didn't notice the crying baby.
No.
They're not going to notice two women standing behind them having an argument.
So at this time, Lynette calls Susan out for only having one child every 18 years. So she doesn't really have a right to call Lynette lazy.
Yeah.
Susan quits because she can't stand to listen to a crying baby because apparently she already has a crying baby at home. And that crying baby at home causes her to cry and it's too much crying. And once again, Susan has made this all about her.
I did also kind of turn around back to Susan's side after hearing that. I was like, oh, that's really sad.
Oh, good God.
What? It's really sad.
It's just deal with it.
It must be really hard for her.
I imagine it is quite hard for her, but she's just there turning it all about her again.
Mm.
And she's like, I can't, I quit, whatever. I can't listen to your baby cry because I'm too upset with my own life, with my decisions that I made, and I caused these problems, and so I'm now bringing it to work.
That being said, you wouldn't hear the baby cry if you were at the party that you're invited to.
Yeah.
So there is that.
That's it. Susan then tells Lynette that she hasn't even had a chance to speak to Mike yet, so Lynette offers Susan to use their phone.
Yeah, which is nice. She can't afford long distance.
No, she can't. Back inside Renee's, she is trying to give Tom more alcohol, but he refuses, and it's just them alone, and it's a little bit awkward, and Tom wonders where Lynette went, then they move on to small talk.
Poor Renee, she throws a party and invites everyone, even the people she doesn't like, and they all just swan off.
Well, I don't know, there are people outside in the driveway.
Oh yeah, screw them. But yeah, they all just swan off. I mean, Susan and Lynette are even just drinking on their own at hers now.
So that's true.
So rude.
So when Renee originally said that the kids are on the driveway, and I said, that's fine, it's a nice day, and then you said, no, it's cruel, and then I've just said there are people in the driveway, and you've said, screw them. Can you please tell me how there is a difference in that?
Because now I'm thinking from Renee's perspective, because the episode calls for it.
Fuck off.
But yeah, these people are rude to just leave this party like this.
People can leave a party whenever they want to leave.
You're meant to announce that you're leaving to the host and thank them for a good time. You don't just swan
off.
A good time.
Also, what good time?
They haven't even eaten yet.
No, they haven't. So Renee complains about being alone and how much she realises it on Wisteria Lane, where everyone is a couple, but Tom doesn't believe that will last very long. And she goes on to say how she always went for the wrong guys, you know, the rich or the famous ones, but she should have been looking for a kind man. And she then compliments Lynette for her sort of capabilities of finding a man, I guess.
Mm.
And Lynette then walks in to interrupt Tom and Renee's awkward flirting.
Right. I thought I was playing games, then I realised this is serious stuff.
This is serious stuff.
Why are you doing this, Renee?
Yeah, it's a bit uncomfortable.
Mm.
And the show really, really pushed it so that Renee and Lynette could be such good friends, and that's why Renee had an introduction to the show, but we've not really seen a lot of friendship.
No, not really.
Renee and Lynette. We've heard a couple of historic stories and they've started a company together, but that's literally all we've seen from them. I've seen more friendship with Renee and Brie than I have with Renee and Lynette.
Yeah, exactly. It's weird.
So anyway, we'll do Paul and Beth. So we officially start the episode with Felicia, who's meeting her daughter Beth once again to discuss what she has found out about Paul. Unfortunately, Beth hasn't really found any evidence to link him to the murder of Martha. And so then Felicia insists that Beth keeps looking, but it doesn't take long for her to find out that Beth has actually slept with Paul, which angers Felicia as Beth has now been defiled by him.
Yeah, this bit confused me because I thought it was implied that Felicia was prostituting her to get revenge, but apparently that was not the case.
No, she was just kind of sending her out.
Because I thought when she was talking on the phone to Felicia in those episodes, she was kind of being told that she needs to do what she needs to do.
Well, I think she was being told she needs to do what she needs to do. And now it turns out that what Beth needed to do was have sex with Paul, which if Felicia probably knew that that was what it took, she probably would have said no. But I don't think Beth actually said, he wants me to sleep with him.
Mm.
And so I think Felicia probably was like, you've just got to do what you've got to do. Find a way.
But I think this is dumb writing because they're married. How did Felicia not think this would come up?
I don't really know. So Beth manages to salvage the situation and Felicia changes her tune when she realises that this could work to their advantage and men are stupid after sex.
Well, yeah.
But she warns Beth before she goes that sex makes women stupid too and open up feelings that they shouldn't be having.
I mean, good for a quality queen.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's basically, I think, essentially the original plan was that Felicia would plant Beth in with Paul to try and get as much information out of Paul about Martha as possible, and then Beth could pull away.
Yeah, and she really thought she'll just say no and turn down any advances and the guy would just stay with her and trust her the whole time.
I think Felicia had this mentality that it really wouldn't take too much to get Paul to open up to Beth.
Yeah.
And so actually Beth could probably get the information needed before sex would even become a thing to think about. But obviously that's not happened. And so it's got to this point where they're in their relationship now and Paul was basically begging for sex. So
yeah, she's nuts.
Yeah. Beth and Paul have just had sex and Paul is worried that something is wrong because Beth seems to be a million miles away. So Beth tells Paul she met someone at the store who said that he'd murdered Martha, but this time she mentions motive. Paul gets up claiming that the whole thing is ridiculous and Beth tries to rationalise why Paul might do such a thing, but he stops her and tells her that everyone knows Felicia Tillman is crazy, and even Martha used to say so.
Yeah.
Look at him, causing a rift. He's literally there, like, sowing doubt in his wife's mind about her mother.
But why does it... How did she not think about this before?
What?
Well, he's just, like, explaining how she must be crazy, and he explains these things which are just kind of obvious. Like, come on, Beth. Use some of that soft tissue cell inside your head.
Well, no, because Beth's probably been manipulated by her mother her whole life.
Well, yeah, well, she's very easy manipulated. So, she didn't see the chopped off fingers and put two and two together.
Well, no, that's the thing. Like, she's probably been manipulated by Felicia her entire life and has been around Felicia all of that time. Felicia's probably never really let Beth out of her sight. This is probably Beth's first time that she's genuinely been out of her mother's control for a long period of time. She's not really out of the mother's control, but she's out of the vicinity of her mother for a long period of time. And so now she's starting to hear other people's points of view and clarity.
But she's just a bit too easily manipulated.
Well, she is.
Even to the point where Paul's like, don't you think that's a bit weird? And she's like, yeah.
Well, yeah, because she's a naive girl that's had no experience in the real world. So she's going to be naive.
I also love that he's like, do you honestly believe that I'm capable of killing another person?
No.
Well, Paul, do you remember how you met the woman? Yeah, I'm pretty sure she thinks that you're capable of killing another person.
Well, no, because he was wrongly convicted for murder.
Yeah, but she didn't know that when she met him.
No.
So, of course, she thinks you're capable.
That's true.
Silly man. That is true. Silly, silly man.
So, Paul and Beth are having Thanksgiving dinner, and it's actually quite a sad scene. Beth opens up about how her and her mother never celebrated it because her father left when she was young, and after that, they apparently, according to Felicia, didn't have anything to be thankful for.
Yeah, and he is so shocked that people wouldn't celebrate Thanksgiving. He's like, you what?
Right? She then tells a really sad story from her childhood about how she almost had a friend over to dinner, but when her mother found out that it was a boy, she flipped out, and Beth deliberately didn't tell her mother that it was a boy until the day of.
Mm.
And so she told her mum, mum flipped out, and then the boy turns up, and Felicia refused to let Beth answer the door, and they just had to sit there and eat dinner, all the while the boy kept knocking, until he kind of got the hint and stopped knocking and left.
Which is, the poor guy.
It's a really sad scene.
Poor Beth.
Poor Beth. Poor, like, young child outside, probably in the cold, like...
I think this must be quite a rare situation as well, where he asks about Beth's upbringing, or just asks anything about Beth, to be honest.
That's true, we've not seen that very much.
Yeah, like, I get the feeling that this is out of the ordinary for him to ask about her for once.
He has done it in the past, but it's not like a consistent thing.
But we're seeing a very different side to both of them in this dinner scene for the first time.
So Beth is only now starting to realise how damaged her mother is, because Paul literally sits there and says, your mother sounds like quite a damaged woman.
Yeah, yeah.
And Beth's like, do you know what? Yes, she is.
Yeah, I never thought of it that way. I just thought people cut their fingers off all the time.
So Paul is very sweet and listens to Beth and essentially tells her that he loves her. And then Beth tells Paul that she now has something to be thankful for.
Yeah, they seem to be falling in love with him, which is really gross.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
But weirdly, I do kind of like them together, because we've seen really dysfunctional moments between Paul and Beth, like really, really dysfunctional moments. So don't get me wrong, there are red flags all over this relationship. But at the same time, in the moments like this, where we see them together, they work, and they work really well, and they have such good chemistry. That actually, I'm not mad about Paul and Beth.
Well, maybe they could have worked under regular circumstances.
Yeah.
Which they have not had.
No, they haven't. At the prison, Felicia is disappointed that Paul still hasn't opened up to Beth about Martha yet, believing that Beth just hasn't gained his trust. I don't know if it's Beth's fault.
Yeah.
She tells Beth to join a Wine of the Month club and start getting Paul drunk on a regular basis. So that this hopefully is the, he'll it's flap the best his gums.
Plan. It's the best plan I've ever heard. It's something that you'd read in a really quickly written murder mystery by an author that releases at least two books a year.
Yeah.
It's, and what, oh it God. Would be called something, it would be called Wine of the Month or Murder of the Month. You know?
Murder of the Month, that's a terrible title.
Yeah. This month's wine runs deep red.
If you give me some time, I could probably think of a good murder title.
Mm.
But, weirdly, everyone's starting to think that Felicia is crazy and she's been laid out to be the crazy one, because we're now starting to hear more about Felicia's past and
which
her relationship with her daughter, which is true. But this one thing which Felicia keeps saying is genuinely true.
Yeah, it's a really strange story, because at the end of it, it'll be like, oh, wait, he did do it?
Oh, wait, he did this entire time.
But my mum is crazy. What?
So it's been a long week for Beth, who's remained fairly quiet this whole time, but she eventually asks Felicia whether it might be possible that Paul didn't kill Martha. He swears he didn't kill her and nobody saw him do it. But once again, this pushes Felicia over the edge because Beth believes Paul. She tells Beth that she wants her out of Paul's house, but Beth refuses to go because Paul is her husband and he's nice to her. But this makes things worse, and Felicia ends up screaming at Beth for being stupid and falling in love with Paul, and then the guards end up dragging her away in like a really dramatic moment.
Yeah, it was a really convincing breakdown.
It really was. Felicia was very good.
Yeah, she does seem really unhinged. Mm. The actor did pretty well with that.
Harriet Sansom Harris, bravo girl.
Mm. And yeah, completely believable that she would start to have her reservations about the idea that he murdered Martha, though he did.
I'm now starting to find myself getting more and more invested in the Beth and Paul story. Now that Felicia's got an involvement in it and she's trying to manipulate Beth to get a Paul, and Paul's clearly manipulating Beth as well, and poor old Beth's being manipulated from both sides.
Yeah, but Beth is also now actually falling in love with Paul, so who knows what dastardly deeds that Felicia's going to do. Who knows what she'll do to get her way now.
Yeah, because if Beth falling in love with Paul, that therefore probably in Felicia's mind makes her daughter her enemy as well.
Yeah, but also she now doesn't have someone on the outside that we know of.
That we know of.
So she has one option, and that's to break out and do it yourself.
Yeah. We now move on to the very last story, which is Gabby's, which is a very sad one.
Yes, but stupid.
It's Thanksgiving, as we know, and Gabby has promised Carmen and Hector that they could come over to theirs and have a traditional Mexican Thanksgiving meal. But Gabby knows nothing about that stuff, so she's leaving it to Carlos.
Yeah.
Which is a real mood, I must say, and yet another reason why I identify with Gabby.
I mean, if someone came in with two big bags of food and told me to cook an entire meal out of the blue, it'd really annoy me.
I mean, this is why I relate to Gabby.
But I would also do it, and I'd probably have a good time with it.
Yeah, you would. You'd have a great time with it.
But I'd be really annoyed.
The Sanchezes are now here. Carlos has been cooking all day. And Carmen and Hector are now having to listen to Gabby and Carlos bicker about who did what and how little Gabby actually did. He asked Gabby where she put the pies, to which Gabby clearly forgot to pick them up. And in a moment that can only be claimed as being pulled out of Friends, whereas, oh, we thought you said prize.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's the Thanksgiving episode of Friends. Carlos tells Gabby she has got to go get the pies, but she's had some wine so she can't drive, which we love to hear. And so Carlos is adamant that she finds a way to get them. And so in the awkwardness of the moment, Hector offers to drive.
She had one thing to do. Why did she forget? She even bought two bags of food. You can buy it with the food.
Yeah.
But also he did overreact a little bit.
But you know who you married, Carlos.
Yeah.
Let's not act like this is such a surprise.
I'm not a fan of people that shame people in front of their guests.
Gabby and Hector are now stuck in traffic, and so Hector believes they should just forget about the pies as the bakery is about to close, but Gabby won't accept defeat, knowing that Carlos will never forget this. And so she tells Hector to drive onto the shoulder as it's clear, and even though it's against the law, he eventually does what Gabby suggests because she's getting bitchy.
Yeah, but at that point, Hector, if anything happens, it's your own fault.
Yeah, you are the responsible party here.
If someone told me drive down the hard shoulder and they were moaning, I'd be like, no, Gabby, shut up. But also, it's very Gabby and we expect nothing less.
Oh, of course, I expect nothing less.
But Hector, you should know better.
They go past the police car, who pulls them over, but Hector doesn't actually have a license, and it turns out that he is an illegal immigrant.
Yeah, so why did you illegally drive down a hard shoulder?
Knowing full well what you would risk if you got caught.
Yeah.
It doesn't go very well, and Hector ends up getting arrested, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
So Gabby rushes home, driving the truck, not very well, because that's apparently her first time driving stick.
Well, yeah, I can't imagine. Well, yeah, I can drive. I can't imagine what it's like for the first time.
Yes, yeah, it's not a very nice feeling.
Yeah, I mean, that slow lift of the clutch the first time.
The figuring out the changing of the gears and the finding
the biting point. That must be really weird if you're only used to automatics.
Yeah,
that must be,
cars that do it for you, yeah. She tells Carmen what happened, sort of lying because she essentially says that...
I told him not to. About driving on the hard shoulder.
Carmen freaks out and grabs Grace and they get ready to head off. And she tells Gabby and Carlos that they need to pack and leave before they find their address because Hector will already be back on a bus to Mexico by tonight. Mm. She tells them that they'll head to Texas whilst they figure out what to do. And Gabby asks when she'll get to see Grace again, but nobody knows.
Rough.
It is real rough. It's sad. It is sad. Gabby rushes over to Carmen's while she's packing to beg her to stay, telling her that she and Carlos hired Bob to represent them and he can help. But Carmen isn't sure as they are breaking the law and her and Hector had a plan, so they should stick to it, which is if one of them gets caught, then they go to the meeting zone. Mm. So Grace runs in and excitedly tells Gabby that she'll be meeting her cousins when they go to Texas. And then Gabby turns to Carmen to tell her that they should stay at theirs until they figure things out so that they can at least get a few more days with the girls because Gabby isn't ready to say goodbye yet. And she does believe that Carmen also isn't ready to say goodbye to Juanita. It's not just all about Gabby.
Yeah, and you can see how desperate Gabby is not to lose Grace in the scene. Yeah. I think this is actually the first time that we hear her call them family.
Yeah, it is actually quite a sweet scene between Gabby and Carmen, who've also always kind of been at odds with each other a little bit.
Yeah.
Historically, so far, that we've seen very few scenes where it has been genuine connection between Carmen and Gabby. And in this moment, Gabby is essentially saying, we'll do what we can to protect you.
Yeah, it's nice.
Mm. At Gabby's place, her, Carlos and Carmen are all talking to Bob about what options they have, but Bob says it's too late for Hector and Carmen, and essentially Carmen turns herself in or she disappears. Grace, on the other hand, was born here and is therefore an American citizen.
Yeah, and as soon as she says that, you can see that the cogs are turning in Gabby's head. Like, you see a switch in her eyes.
Gabby goes to make the girls some breakfast, and she ends up making waffles, Grace's favourite, and Gabby tells her that she can have them whenever she wants, which makes Grace wish that she could live there all the time, which gives Gabby a plan.
Yeah, but as soon as she heard that she was US born...
you could see.
There was planning.
You could see, like, oh, if she's US born, we could keep her, blah, blah, blah. So we don't really know what's coming from that yet. We've had a really sweet scene with Carmen and Gabby, and Gabby is potentially about to ruin it.
Yeah.
We end the episode with Mary Alice reminding us that once a year we must stop and give thanks for what we have, and we see Susan rocking Paige to sleep, Keith checking out the engagement ring he brought, Felicia looking at a picture of her daughter from prison, and Gabby thinking about how she can keep Grace forever.
Oh dear.
Yeah. We've entered Gabby's villain arc.
So, let's move on to the next part of the episode, where we are going to be given our gayest and straightest moments. So Joel, what do you have for the gayest moment?
My award for gayest moment... I'm giving it to Renee for clearly watching some gay porn and then getting the idea of wearing nothing but a towel in order to seduce someone coming over to your house.
You think that's just gay porn?
Well, no, but it's very gay.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's very much. It's all across all porn, really, let's face it.
Well, the gays are very unsubtle when they want to get laid.
We really are. We really are very unsubtle.
And then what do you have for the straightest moment?
My award for straightest moment. I'm giving it to Tom for perving out on Renee so much in this episode. All Renee had to do was wear a towel, and Tom was like drooling and forgetting that he's holding shit in his hands and then going back to his house for a wank. Like, it's really disturbing.
Oh, I can't believe you used that word on this podcast.
What, wank?
Yeah.
That's the second time I've used it in this episode.
It's just so gross.
Fine. What do you want me to say instead?
I don't know. It doesn't matter. It's fine.
And so those are my awards. So, and now we move on to B's awards for best and worst parent. So who do you have for the best parent?
My award for...
best parent of the episode
goes to Keith's dad for convincing Keith not to give up on marriage.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Yeah.
But
yeah.
Only for that one moment.
Only for that one moment, because now it feels like he's about to try and seduce his son's girlfriend.
Yeah, I don't think that's the best parental behavior.
No,
but since there wasn't anything confirmed by it, I can't really...
we can't, it's too soon to say if that's the way things are going, so yeah. We can't. Yeah. And so who do you have for the worst parent of the episode?
My award for
worst parent of the episode,
I gave this to, and it's a joint award, so maybe they can break it like Katie does with the award in Mean Girls, but I gave it to Susan and Lynette for allowing their kids to eat on the driveway at the party.
That's not their fault. They're guests.
It is their fault.
They're guests at the other person's house.
If I'm going to a party with my children and they're made to eat on the driveway, I would say they're either eating inside or I'm leaving with them.
All right, then bye.
They are going to be treated just like every other guest here, thank you very much, except for the alcohol.
Well, yeah. Yeah, true.
So I'm sorry, but I cannot allow that kind of behavior. Just because you want to go to a party, just because you don't want to have to cook for your children, that doesn't mean they should be treated like second-class citizens.
Yeah, fine.
So yeah, bravo, fucking bravo, everybody. That was Season 7, Episode 8, Sorry Grateful. If anyone has any questions, queries, comments and theories, where can they find us, Joel?
You can find us on Instagram at boyfriendsreview.
Our email address is boyfriendsreview@outlook.com, and our artwork is done by Louis, who you can find on Instagram at @gridmonkdesign, and he also does the podcast artwork, and there's a link there to his Etsy page.
He does, yes.
Join us next week when we'll be back in your ear holes with Season 7, Episode 9, Pleasant Little Kingdom.
Oh, that's a cute episode title. Much better than this one.
It sounds like a kid's storybook.
It does, yeah.
See you then.
Bye.
Bye.